Offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. Joining you live from our studios at Prashanthi Nilayam, this is Prem, and with me is Brother Sai Prakash. We are here to resume our conversation on the book Conversation with Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. The interviews, conversations, questions and answers documented by Dr. Hislop. We've been going through this series for well over a couple of years, I think. And the beautiful conversations that has transpired, that have been documented, have gone through many beautiful topics that are essential for each one of us, topics based on Swami's message. And I think I should admit that much of this has to be revisited. There's so much to take in, even though we have done it slowly and over a period of long time. It still is too much to take in and remember, and definitely it's something worthwhile going back again and again, reading through this. And sometimes going through these conversations, you can make out that even Hislop is repeating some of his questions, right? Some of these have been explained by Swami earlier, but clearly these are not concepts that can be grabbed merely over one conversation. It needs, as Swami would say, Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam. It needs to be contemplated upon and absorbed. And in a small way, we try to do it in this program with the hope that you and us go back and do the Mananam by ourselves. We've been following this entire book as it has been published in our heart-to-heart journal. And it was published as 40 parts. So in that sense, we are in the 40th part. So the last set of conversations in this book, as documented in that article, is what we're going to go through. So before we start that, let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sairam, Sai Prakash.
Sairam, Prem. Sairam, dear listeners. Indeed, it has been such a wonderful journey going through some of these topics and conversations in this book. And everything that Swami says in the book is with a lot of love. And there it is in primarily directed towards Dr. Hislop. And Swami is, of course, the all-knowing and aware that this conversation will help thousands and millions of people later, just like the Bhagavad Gita was primarily given to Arjuna. And that same Bhagavad Gita is used for, is been giving, throwing, giving light to the lives of millions of people across centuries. So this set of conversations is also something of the kind, and the love with which Swami says and explains these things is so beautiful. And on the other hand, the humility with which Dr. Hislop asks these questions, there is a frankness about it. At the same time, there is a humility, and there is a, you know, a feeling of wanting to know, wanting a sadhaka, that burning fire in him to know and to spiritually improve. I remember I think the Gita Vahini, one of the first lines that Swami says, he says, "What is the attitude with which you should approach the Bhagavad Gita?" He says, with an attitude of humility and with an attitude of openness, that is the attitude with which you should approach the Bhagavad Gita. And here is the fountain of all knowledge. And when he asks this question, the answers are, the words are very simple. There is no complicated word. There is no word in this book, I'm sure, which requires us to go to a dictionary and see the meaning of such word. The words are very simple, but the message is so subtle and so profound. And it's in a lot of silence, and it's a lot of contemplation that we can actually grasp the meaning of most of these concepts.
Right. And as you rightly said, the honesty with which these questions are placed.
Right.
And in many places, you would find that Hislop admits that I don't grasp this, or I'm struggling with this in my sadhana. At the same time, with the same openness and the same honesty, he says that this I can follow. Right. He says that I am able to do this. In fact, there's a very beautiful talk by Dr. Hislop in our collection. I think it's there on the website, where he says this, that he comes from a very intellectual background of the Vipassana meditation and all those kind of rigorous practices. And when Swami tells him that Namasmarana is the means for redemption in this Kali Yuga, he says, I could not make sense of it.
Oh, okay.
How could simply chanting a name and contemplating upon it help me? And then in that he says in a very beautiful and very matter-of-fact manner, he says, but I have accepted him as my guru and what he says I have to follow.
Oh.
He says, so I started doing Namasmarana, and he says in a matter of 3 or 4 years that Namasmarana became Nityasmarana. It would constantly go on, and he says, even as I'm talking to you, it is going on in the background.
Beautiful.
And I think that is the sincerity which he brings to these conversations. Mm. That intellectually I cannot understand it. I am not in a state where I can completely grasp what Swami is saying. But he is the guru, I am the disciple, and I have to bring in obedience as my first offering.
There is a beautiful incident documented in the book Face to Face with Ramana Maharishi. I was just reading it. There was a young man who came up to Ramana Maharishi, and he said, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa gave that experience of bliss and oneness to Vivekananda.
Okay.
Just by looking at him or touching him, he gave him that experience. So, why don't you give me that experience? So, he asked Ramana Maharishi, and with a lot of, young blood. Mm. So, he said, I want to have that experience. And he came and sat there in front of Ramana Maharishi. And Ramana Maharishi is always silent. He never speaks anything. And even on this occasion, he heard the boy. And he was lovingly looking at him, but in silence. And this boy was getting agitated. Give me my bliss fast. I need that experience quickly. I mean, just touch me. What are you going to lose? Or can you do it or can't you do it? These are the thoughts that are going on in his mind. And so after a pause, after some time, Ramana Maharishi looked at him and asked, so have you become Vivekananda? So have you become Vivekananda? Are you eligible for that grace? Are you eligible for that power? So, and the boy was very flustered, and he got up and walked out, I believe. Then after he went out, Ramana Maharishi told others. He said, he was trying to question me whether I have the power to give that experience. But first, you should try to see within yourself, are you eligible to get that grace? So in that sense, if you see Dr. Hislop, he's gone through these stages. He's gone through this process of inquiry. And those gaps that he has experienced, he asked Swami as a sincere seeker. And that's why Swami chose to give him these answers.
Absolutely. And in that sense, the conversation continues. In the past couple of episodes that we did, we saw a variety of topics. Some of that repeats here, and Swami spoke about living in the present.
Right.
Swami spoke about consciousness, and one of the topics which we're going to see a lot of discussion happening is about life elsewhere.
Yes.
Swami's going to talk about that. But before that, Swami Hislop asks a question on a topic which is very dear to Swami. Swami asks, Hislop asks, what is duty to society? And in response to that, Swami says, duty is the exercise of your freedom, but in such a way that you do not deny others their freedom. For example, a teacher's freedom to leave the classroom is dependent on his duty to teach the students. A politician's freedom to run for public office is dependent on his ability to serve the people. And Hislop asks, is duty to society universal and binding on every person? Swami says, if a man is living on spirit, he has no duty or obligation to society. Hislop says, living on spirit must be having total faith in God and total dependence on Him. Swami responds to that by saying, faith in the divine is single and cannot be gained by reason. It is either there or there is no faith. It can arise through sadhana. Why are people unhappy? Again, that conversation continues after that. Maybe we'll just take this much.
Yes.
So the question is on duty, on dharma, a topic very dear to Swami.
Right. And this is a very, very unique definition of duty, what Swami is giving. Like, duty looked at as an activity or as something expected of out of a person in relation to others in the society, isn't it?
Right. So clearly Swami says that your duty is dependent on others' freedom.
Right.
Right. And this is something I think if you read into Swami's literature or any scripture in Sanatana Dharma, one of the changes in perspective that needs to come with the spiritual life is this, relating to worldly life and our living in society. This change in from a freedom-centric life to a duty-centric life.
Mm.
From saying that, what are my rights? From a rights-centric life to a duty-centric life. Constantly ask, what am I supposed to do?
Correct. In fact, this is a very interesting juxtaposition of two words. I mean, the two words are coming together, duty and freedom. And this is something which actually was troubling me a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the sense, I have asked a couple of people and I was trying to look for these answers. In the sense, okay, I have a set of duties. I have to do this duty. Suppose I choose not to do my duty. What happens then? And in case my not doing my duty is not coming in the way of anybody else doing their duty. Suppose I'm not doing my duty and it's not affecting anybody else. Is that all right? Is that accepted?
Mm.
That was part one. And just because I do my duty, what happens?
Mm.
Okay, this was the thought. And I've asked a couple of people and they said, you know, duty, you should do duty with the sense of detachment. And you should make it eligible to be offered to God. See, whatever actions you do as a part of your duty, that should be offered to God and that should be done with that feeling. But still that, you know, I'm not getting that complete answer. So I was thinking about it, reading and going through several things. And it's also, you know, that sense of when somebody says, do your duty, it's like, you better do it. You know, it's like, you are a student, you better study. And that kind of feeling, you know, where you're forced to do something. Like Swami used to say, like army discipline, you're forced to do something. Arey, it's your duty, man, you better do it. So that kind of force, you know, somehow it didn't make me very happy or comfortable. Then I came across this beautiful explanation by Nisargadatta Maharaj in his book, I Am That, The Conversations. So there, he is talking about freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the only way you can actually be free is to do your duty completely properly.
Mm.
And it took a while to understand what it means. He says, because if you do your duty with attachment, if you do your duty improperly, then the results of the duty or the action are coming back to you.
Mm.
And there is still a link, there is a bond between you and what you do. But the moment you do your duty perfectly and completely, then you can be detached from it. So in a way, actual freedom comes only when you do your duty perfectly and properly.
Mm.
So you're doing your duty for the duty's sake. You're not doing duty because, you know, out of force. Or out of, resistance, out of anything. You're just doing the duty for the duty's sake.
Mm.
So, you know, that was a very beautiful explanation. He says, you can only be free. True freedom is actually doing your duty perfectly.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, that's a beautiful insight.
Absolutely. In fact, there is a discourse in which Swami speaks about this,
mm-hmm.
where he puts it this way, that no birth is random.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you are born into a family, you're born into a situation, you're born into a particular society, a country, community. All of that because you've been placed there because of all your actions. You've been precisely placed there, especially when you're dropped into a family. It means you have give and take.
Right.
Right. That's why you are there.
Mm.
Now, having born there, you have to perform actions.
Mm.
The question is, as Nasagradatta Maharaj explained, how do you perform actions in a manner that you do not further bind yourself?
Correct.
And you're able to settle the debt,
mm-hmm.
So to say. And that is where this idea of, yoga, karma, sukaushalam,
right.
And then do it with detachment, do it with without attachment to the fruits. All of that comes into that acknowledgement of, I'm here to, there is a certain give and take and that needs to be settled.
It is done for its sake.
Right, it's done for its sake. It's just done and you move on. And that's why that the idea of dharma or duty is so central to any spiritual discourse, right? Swami would often say that, today we are talking about morality in society.
Mm.
And many of Swami's initial discourses during the summer courses,
right.
Or discourses to students in the initial years would center around this. The discussion on morality in society is not complete without this discussion on spirituality.
Mm.
There should be a spiritual basis. Right, so as you were saying, the whole idea of dharma is actually based on this idea of what is your goal of life?
Right.
Where are you heading towards? But put in a very beautiful way.
Correct.
That, you have a duty towards the freedom of others.
Exactly. Another point which really comes up in this line of thought is, what is the difference between dharma and duty? Okay, is there a difference, first of all? Is the word duty just an English translation of the Sanskrit word dharma? Or is dharma a much bigger thing of which duty is a part, part of what we call as dharma? I'm sure there are scholars and there's a lot of thought that has gone into it. But one way of looking at it is, water is not doing its duty by wetting your hands. Its nature, its dharma is to wet. The fire is not doing its duty. Its nature, its dharma is to burn. So in that sense, can we analyze it in this way, that you have an innate nature, you have what you truly ought to be. That is your dharma. That is your dharma. And then when you are dealing with others in the world, when you are interacting, then there's a sense of duty to it. And duty also has this sense of interactability with others. And like Swami is saying, yeah, you want to do your duty, but don't come in the way of what others' freedom is, what they want to do.
Right. So I think, this was an analogy which I had thought of and I was trying to understand. going back to that same thing what you were saying about every object has its duty. Swami would refer to it, the fire is dharma, the water is dharma. Swami would use a phrase for that. Swabhava, not exactly swabhava, the innate nature,
right.
Swami would say. Everything is born with an innate nature. So in that sense, Swami would say, the innate nature or the quality with which human birth is given is that this birth can lead you to divinity.
Mm.
Right? No other animal form has that as the, the swabhava of that life. The crow is not born with that innate nature that it can become divine. The cow is not born with that innate nature. Only a human being is born with that innate nature. So when we talk about dharma, it is like, how best you can lead your life that nature is fulfilled.
Mm.
Just like how, suppose if we were to say the water's dharma is to quench thirst.
Right.
Right. The water has to be in a certain form to be able to do that.
Mm.
The water is polluted, it is not going to serve that dharma.
Right.
If that water is dirty, it is not going to serve that dharma. So what if you do, water can serve its dharma.
Mm.
I think that action also becomes dharma.
Correct.
So what if I do, this human birth will take me to the purpose that it is meant for.
Mm.
That action also becomes dharma.
Beautiful.
And as you said, one very tiny part in that is duty towards people around.
Correct.
Right. But it's a fundamental step. So doing mistakes there can, you know, bring down the whole pack of cards in that sense.
In the 1990 summer showers, Swami's talking about the census and Swami's talking about, and there this word freedom comes.
There's an entire discourse on that.
Yes.
Like, what is freedom?
Freedom of the census. So, you know, very beautifully Swami is giving so many stories and so many ways in which you can, you know, keep the senses under control. And why should you keep the senses under control? Because most of the times when youngsters or anybody for that matter, why can't I do what I want? Why are you curbing my freedom? So if a person says, I want to go in the street playing loud music because I am free, freedom of expression, freedom of this thing, I want to do it. But then he's causing a lot of trouble to everybody else in the street and everybody else. So that is coming in the way of their freedom. So obviously that is not a complete way of the right way of expressing his freedom. And Swami says that if you notice, what is happening is most of these occasions when we say we want to express freedom, it is actually giving a free ride to the senses.
Right.
The senses are what pulls you outward and they say, why can't you do this, man? Why can't, Swami says in the discourse, a new cinema has come. The eye says, no, no, I want to see the new cinema. And then the nose is actually given. Its duty is to take in the air, breathe in and breathe out and take, fragrant smells to keep the body healthy. But then you go and put your snuff there. The mouth has a dual role, to speak and to partake good food. But then you're going against the dharma, against the duty of what the mouth is given for. And you are drinking alcohol. So what happens is when a sense organ is used against different from what it was meant to do, from its duty, from its dharma, then there is a problem. And then in that line of thought, as Swami was telling, then Swami says, youngsters today say that birds and animals have a lot of freedom. Why can't I experience that freedom? And Swami says, are you wanting to experience the freedom of the animals? Are you wanting to experience the freedom of the birds? No, no, you should experience the freedom that is innate, that is, that is what gives you a human stature. The human stature is so high up, and what is the freedom that the human ought to experience? That freedom you're supposed to experience. And very beautifully, Swami says, what is that freedom? That freedom is Atmajnana. That the very fact that as a human being you are eligible to acquire Atmajnana, that is the freedom that is befitting you as a human being. And he says, don't go behind the freedom of birds and animals. Experience the freedom of a human being.
In fact, I think, I don't know whether it's in the same discourse or elsewhere, Swami makes that point. You know, when you say, I want freedom, I want to do what I want, then Swami asks, who wants to do what who wants? Right? So when you say, I want to do what I want, it's actually the freedom of the ego. Right? Which means you're losing control. It is not that you're in control. And
right.
If you really look at it, what do we want to do? You know, generally, most of the fights that happen between teenage children and parents, right? The children would want to do something and the parents would say, it's not be done. What is it the children want to do? They want to do what is dictated by things outside.
Right.
Right. Somebody says that this is fashion. Someone says that this is what you have to watch. Oh, haven't you seen this series? Haven't you, you know, played this game? Right. So you are actually becoming a slave to whatever is the tendency is around. And Swami says, which means you're not in control. It is like the example that I often say, I am not a good driver of a car and I am going here and there from one part of the road to the other, and I call it freedom. I can drive whichever way I want. I have the freedom. No, the fact is you don't have control over the car. The one who is able to take the car into the road, follow all the traffic rules and regulations and still reach the destination is the one who is actually having the complete freedom.
Exactly.
Right? I don't have to wait till the road gets clean, cleared for me to drive.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Swami used to say that first man drinks wine. And then wine drinks wine, then wine drinks man.
Right. So where is your sense of control and you are not asserting yourself. In fact, I think that discourse, there is that beautiful Chinnakatha that Swami says about a fight between the husband and the wife. Right. And Swami says, I think three or four he says that.
Yes. You know, the Tukaram.
He says that, you know, you want to call your friends for a party.
Right.
Right. And then suddenly your boss calls you and gives you a work. So then you call up them and you say that, no, I can't have the party. I have other work. So Swami says that comes under sambandham. You have some kind of a relationship with your friends because of which there is a little bit of freedom.
Yes.
You know, I wanted to do this, but I don't want to do this. Then Swami says, Swami says you get a headache. So you call up your friends and say, I'm having a headache, I don't want. Then a few minutes later, your boss calls you and says that important report has to be submitted immediately. You have to come tomorrow. He says, even though you have a headache, there the compulsion is a little more.
Right.
So Swami says, you will go take a shot and then you will go to office.
Correct.
Then Swami says, there it is nirbandham.
Nirbandham.
Then the third example that Swami gives is, he says, you have a fight with your wife.
Right.
And you don't speak to each other and suddenly a guest comes.
You're forced to go
You're
in.
You're forced to go and tell her that make some coffee, you know, so and so has come. Swami says, that is kartavyam. Right. So duty is a, you know, where you're able to put behind your own likes and dislikes.
Correct.
You know, what I want to do, what I don't want to do. Yes, there are some things that I would like to do, I don't want to do. But when juxtaposed with kartavyam, with duty, you give preference to kartavyam. I think that's what Swami says here in this, right? Your freedom is there, but your freedom should not infringe on others' freedom, right?
Correct. See, the whole, sometimes this whole idea of one's duty can be looked at as something, you know, very difficult to follow or something which is not very, I would say, profitable or happy in the worldly sense as such. There is this famous poem called Casabianca by Felicia Hermans from 1826. So basically, the poem is about a boy standing at the edge of the ocean where his father has gone for a war. The boy stood on the burning deck whence all but he had fled. The flame that lit the battle's wreck shone round him over the dead. Yet beautiful and bright he stood as born to rule the storm, a creature of heroic blood, a proud though childlike form. The flames rolled on, he would not go without his father's word. That father faint in death below, his voice no longer heard. He called aloud, "Say, father, say, if yet my task is done." He knew not that the chieftain lay unconscious of his son. "Speak, father," once again he cried, "if I may yet be gone." And but the booming shots replied, and fast the flames rolled on. So the poem goes on, and the last paragraph says, verse says, "With mast and helm and pennon fair, that well had borne their part, but the noblest thing which perished there was that young faithful heart." So what happened was, he was standing there because his father told him to stand there, and his father has gone into battle. And he has been waiting and calling out to his father, not realizing that his father has been shot and is dead in the battle. And because his father told him to stand there as a duty of the son, who cannot move away without his father giving him permission to leave the spot, he was constantly calling out to his father. But then because of the battle and because of the flames, he also perished in this thing. So this was a poem, and I think there has been a lot of debate on this as to, was he right in doing his duty in the sense that he stood there till his death? So is that duty? Is that what duty means? That, you know, you're doing this. So because his father told him, and then if you look at the case of even in the Ramayana, so there seems to be some kind of a feeling that, oh, if you're going to do your duty, your life is not going to be very happy. You're going to face problems, you're going to face difficulties, you're going to face these things. So where do you get that energy, or where do you get that will to actually do your duty? And I think that energy and that will comes from trying to understand what is reality. Because the more and more you understand, you're dependent on the worldly parameters for your happiness or for your success, you're not going to be able to do your duty, because that will come in the way. But the moment you have that sense of detachment and give up and just say that, no, this my duty towards my true self, my duty towards what I am, what my dharma is, what I truly am, is foremost to the self. And I think that is when these other duties slowly fall away, isn't it?
Right. I think, I mean, as we've been discussing, it becomes so much more easier when, you know, the goal is spiritual.
Correct.
As long as we are looking at it from the point of view of the worldly benefits that one can get from it, going back to that poem, you know, you're talking about life, and you're talking about what are the benefits that will come to me in the form of material benefits. Then when that becomes the focus, then the process is the one which is sacrificed. Right. You fix that as my goal. And the other way around is, you know, when you find anything in the physical, in the run-up to it, is not useful. I'm looking at something which is beyond, right? If you look at the life of somebody like Yudhishthira, Swami would often say that because his view was so much more beyond anything that can be physically got, you know, the kingdom or whatever it is, that was why he was able to hold on to dharma. Right. There's a discourse, or one of the Vahinis, I think it's one of the Vahinis, Swami mentions that Draupadi comes and asks Yudhishthira, what has dharma given you? Why are you so obsessed with it?
Right.
Right. You know, what have you got that you have to stick to it?
Mm.
So this is during the time when they are in the forest, during the Vanavasa. So apparently, Yudhishthira is sitting on a hillock and he's looking at the mountains. And you could see the Himalayas from that place. Right. Then he tells Draupadi, he says, look at these Himalayas. You know, I find that I am so attracted to them. I have so much love to them. But they don't give me anything. They are just there. Right? There is no give and take in this relationship, but still I feel so much love towards them. He said, same is the case with dharma. I don't seek anything from it. It is just that idea is so grand and so this one that I am committing myself to it. And I don't seek anything in return. Even if I perish in this process, it doesn't matter at all. Because I am committed to that idea, that what dharma is. Right? So I think that is what is will make everything else simple and easy and in the process.
So beautiful. In fact, what you are saying is that love, that admiration, that if that love for dharma, that love for the duty that you are supposed to do, that is that beautiful quote which Swami often says, no, love and duty.
Right.
So he says, duty without love is deplorable, duty with love is desirable, and love without duty is divine. So, you know, whether the duty that you're doing is coming in the way of somebody else's freedom or not, There are so many. In fact, I was just going through the beautiful stories, which I thought we could divide it into these three things, these three headings of duty without love, duty with love, and love without duty. So if you take the case of duty without love is deplorable, like you're doing your duty with some sense of compulsion. Array, I have to do it. Whether I like it or not, I have to do it. And so there is this beautiful story which comes to mind of the cat. There's a from this two sisters who were in Assam. And you know that cat story where the duty was to look after the cat, because the younger sister had this cat and the elder sister was not happy with the cat. And she would always scold the cat, and she would say, this cat is no good. It's not even able to catch a rat. and she would always blame the cat. And this was going on, and the younger sister was, you know, trying to defend it and keep it. But then one day what happened was, she was cooking fish, I believe, and this cat came and snatched the fish away and then took it. And that really, you know, made her very angry. And she started shouting, look at your cat, you are not looking after it and it's no good, leave it, this, that. So the younger sister also got worked up, and she took the cat and she started hitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And she started hitting the cat. And as she was hitting the cat, all the photographs in the house, Swami's photos, because they would do bhajans in the house, all the photographs fell down. And both the sisters were, the elder sister said, hey, stop beating the cat. It definitely looks like Swami is not happy with it, because all the photos have fallen down. And they even thought that it might have been an earthquake for a moment.
Mm.
And they saw that only Swami's photos have fallen down, not all the photographs. So when she was hitting the cat, only Swami's photos have fallen down. And so they were, you know, taken aback that Swami has given such a clear sign. And then she just left the cat, and the cat, you know, just shook. And there was a lot of vibhuti coming out from the cat. And so Swami had given protection to the cat, putting vibhuti all over its body. And in fact, Kasturi uncle writes that during the birthday celebration, all these people had traveled for a week or so, 10 days from Assam, all the way from Assam, because they had to change trains, and there was a lot of violence going on between Bengalis and Assamese people. And they had gone through a lot of hardships, and they had come all the way from Assam. And after the birthday celebration, Swami said, see, a lot of you have come by a special coach, and you all have taken so much pains to come here. So all of you who have come in the special coach, come to the mandir, I will give you prasadam. And Swami came and Swami spoke to them for a while, and he was giving vibhuti and par namaskar to everybody. And as he was giving vibhuti to, he gave it to one girl, and then he walked forward and came back two steps again and took one hand full of vibhuti and said, Billi ke liye, this is for your cat. And he just gave this whole bunch of vibhuti back and said, this is for your cat. And Kasturi uncle, who was holding the basket, he thought, my God, what is this? Swami is giving vibhuti for the cat. And so he says, I tracked her. The moment the event was over, I tracked her and went and asked her, what is this? Swami is giving vibhuti for the cat. And then she said, she narrated this entire story. So in a sense, you are going in this duty without love. I have to look after the cat. If you have to look after the cat with love, and then that is desirable. So I think every action that you think you have to do, like Swami would often say, do what you want, but do what you have to do.
Right.
What is the exact quote? I don't
do what want. You like.
What you like, exactly. Right. Like what you have to do, correct.
When we were talking about duty, that's what we said, you know. And when you look at duty as a means to spiritual progress, you'll of course do your duty, right?
Correct.
The moment it is said that, you know, if you do this, you are going to be taken to a higher state, or you'll be blessed with liberation, automatically the duty will be done. But then the problem with that is you'll do it as it has to be done, right? Swami would make a reference to many of the people who work in the ashram, which I think is a message to all of us.
Right.
Because you would find that, you know, there were people who certainly had love and devotion for Swami, and they were given a certain work to be done, and they would do that. But in the process of doing that, you know, this problem of separating work from worship, right? You have love and devotion for Swami, but the work which I'm doing is totally different. You're so drawn into the moment, you start becoming a little too strict, more bitter than it is necessary, because it is necessary sometimes to be stern. So Swami would tell that, you know, there are many examples of that. They would say that Swami once called all the ashram people for a discourse in the bhajan hall. And Swami said, you know, my devotees have given you all some titles. I want to confer that on you. And then he went on to say, you want to know what are the titles? Then bulldog and Alsatian.
Oh my God.
And then Swami said, see, this is doing duty without love. Right? You are doing your duty perfectly. There's no doubt about that. Because most people, right, the way they commit themselves and the way they slog and offer their efforts to Swami. But in the process, this love goes off. Right? That is what differentiates you doing duty elsewhere and doing it with the idea, I'm doing my duty as an offering to Swami.
Very true.
Right? Because when you say I'm offering to Swami, Swami says you have to offer what I like. Right? You cannot give me something that I don't like.
Exactly. Exactly.
And love becomes mandatory in any of that.
Correct. In fact, one very beautiful incident which comes to mind is we had a senior in the hostel. I think his name was Jeevan Shekhar. And so he would wake up in the morning, and much before the Suprabhatam started, he would come and clean the altar. He would clean Swami's photograph. He would, you know, wash it every day sincerely. And he didn't want anybody to see him doing it. And everybody would come half sleepy in the morning for Suprabhatam, and nobody would notice. But he would get up early, and he made it a point to do it as an offering, silent prayer and offering to Swami. And towards the end of the year, Swami actually in the veranda called him. And Swami said, none of you know, but I know.
Beautiful.
I know. And then Swami took him with him to Kodaikanal. Swami said, I know what this boy has done. So that is love, duty with love. You know, you're with love, you're doing that duty, and then it doesn't become a burden. It becomes something so beautiful. And I think as humans, we can reach this level of duty with love. But then love without duty is divine. So that only the divine can do. Now, when we are talking about duty and freedom, like what Swami is saying, and there comes a time in the life of many of the people who have come to Swami where they were doing what they thought is freedom. And then that knock on the head comes when Swami actually directs them. Because that is only love. There is no duty. That's love without duty. This is pure love. That is when God calls you, when God gives you such a knock on the head and pulls you. So what you thought is your actual freedom changes its entire definition. And in this context, you know, I was reading this beautiful story of, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's More or More. Professor Kasturi has documented this beautiful story. So he says that this gentleman, More, as a youngster, he was a good singer. He's from the US. He's a black American. And so he wanted to, you know, as a young child, he was a choir boy and a little boy and was good at singing. And then later he was employed in a hotel as a dishwasher and a waiter. And then he was promoted to a deputy manager because he was a good man. He was doing his work well. And then what happened is he wanted to become the manager. So he was doing his duty all along. he loved his duty. He was doing it. And then he wanted to become the manager, but he couldn't because it was a white man's hotel. So then what happened? That made him lose his complete direction in life. And he became so upset with everything. And what he did was, he said, no, we should fight for our rights. Why? What is the point in going on doing this duty? We should fight for our rights. And he became a sort of a leader for the blacks and in that community. And so he would always fight for the rights, and he became a part of a gang which would go and start robbing banks and all that. He went completely off track. He went completely off track. And then he was actually staying in the ground floor, and in the first floor was his gang leader. So they would interact, they would talk, and they would, you know, kind of plan which bank to rob next, this, that, and how whom to harass. And they would go and kidnap people, and they would extort money. And so he went completely on the wrong track. And he had his wife. He was just married, and his wife, she was not able to take this, and she was saying, "Why have you lost? There was so much of goodness in you, and what has happened?" She said, "He was just brush her off." And the wife's brother, I believe, who lived in California, he told her, "Why don't you come and stay with me for a few days? Because I know you're finding it difficult to stay with him." So she goes to him. And she stays with him. And when she comes back, she comes back with a photograph of Swami. The couple of photographs of Swami and a couple of books on Swami. So, because her brother knew about Swami, so she got those pictures and books back to her, to his house. And so she had kept it there. Then what happened was, one of those days, this man, they were planning a bank robbery. And so when they were planning a bank robbery, you know, all the gang leader and all of them were sitting there. And suddenly somebody said, "No bank robbery, the police have come to know. The police have got a wind of what we are planning to do. Okay. So there's no bank robbery." And so he got very upset, and he was, you know, getting up, and he was walking up and down in the hall. And then with that disappointment, he hit that small table, and the table fell over, and he fell down and got a knock on his head. And what fell right next to him was Dhyana Vahini by Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba.
My God. What are the chances?
So he hit his head and he fell down, and what fell right next to him was Dhyana Vahini. Can you believe it? And what happened? What did this man do? He saw this book and he just picked it up and sat and read the whole thing in one go. And Professor Kasturi says, if it was Stories for Children or Satyam Shamsundaram, you can imagine at least he would have read. But this is Dhyana Vahini. Dhyana Vahini. And he said a book like Dhyana Vahini is not easy to comprehend. It after a lot of, you know, sadhana, you need to read it. But of course, Professor Kasturi says, we don't know what he read in the book. Swami must have made him read what he wanted him to read. So, but he sat and read the entire book in one go. And he became very interested in knowing about Swami. And he asked his wife, "Is this man..." he said, "Who is this Sai Baby, Sai Baby?" So first he read this, his name is Sai Baby. He said, no, this is Sai Baba. And then he said, no, is he still alive? And they said, yeah, he's still alive. And she found out where, you know, they held bhajans in St. Louis. So they went and started attending bhajans. And the person in whose house the bhajans were being held, he told Moore, you know, you have come at the right time, because now I am leaving this place and going, and you have to handle the bhajans. So this man was saying, my God, what has all this come to? And he said, okay, but how am I going to do it? And right on the first floor is this gang leader who is, you know, who is pulling him back to his bad ways, and who they have to plan the further robbery of the bank and all that. So he was like wondering what to do. And as they were driving back from the Sai Center, they saw a lot of police cars in front of their house. And they saw a lot of things being taken away from the house, and they were wondering what it is. And they saw that the police have come and caught the gang leader. And as the gang leader was being taken away, he said, "Hi, Moore, I'm going. So now you can be free. You can do what you want." He told him. And he said, "No, I'm going." And so that problem was cleared. And then, so they started doing bhajans in the first floor where this person used to live. They made it into a samiti, and they would do bhajans. And then he had the strong urge to come and see Swami. And then he said, but they didn't have enough money. And then there was a lady who came forward to help him. And he actually came to Parthi. And when he came to Parthi, Swami asked, "What do you want?" And he said, "Swami, Vibhuti." So I said, "Vibhuti." And Swami materialized Vibhuti and then put it, gave a lot of Vibhuti to him. And Swami called him for an interview and materialized Vibhuti and actually rubbed it on his chest. Swami said, "Remove your shirt," and then rubbed the entire Vibhuti on his chest. You know, he says, clearing him of all the bad actions or the bad things that he had done before. So Swami put Vibhuti and cleared him. So in a sense, love without duty is divine. You know, this story is so beautiful where if you look at it practically, he thought that doing something wrong was freedom. See, he was actually doing his duty well earlier when he was doing work in the hotel. He was a dishwasher, then he became a deputy manager, and he was doing his duty well. But he was not satisfied with that. He thought that that was curbing his freedom. And then he started doing things which he thought is actual freedom. But since there was still that goodness in his heart, Swami gave him a knock on the head and, you know, pulled him completely towards him. And that is the beautiful story of love without duty is divine.
Absolutely. You really think of it. In fact, when I was thinking of this, what is it, love without duty, right? Swami would, I think, often give this example of the best example with love with duty is like what a mother does for the child, a father does for the child. You know, especially the Indian families, the middle class families, you would always find this. The parents stretch themselves to, you know, give the best life they can for the children, and they do it very happily.
Correct.
Because it is done out of love. You know, you would find that self-abnegation is so obvious with parents, but there is always that done with love. Right, but when you talk of love without duty, I think that is something which is actually lacking in everyday life. Right, you find a father does for the child, you'll find a husband does for the wife, wife does for the husband, but nobody is ready to do beyond that, go beyond that. And many times, I was recently listening to a interview by one of our old students. Right, you know, he's a good boy. Finally, you know, everyone is good in the end of the day, but when he comes to the hostel, as many, many students have said, you know, the first interactions in the hostel, even my classmates would say that one of the boys would come and say, brother, which room has been allotted to you? They'll take your luggage and go.
Right.
And somebody gives their plate. He said, see, these are all things which are beyond the scope of duty, really.
Correct.
Why should anybody do anything like this for you? There's no necessity for someone to step outside their call of duty and do this. It is being done because it is being done out of love. Right?
Absolutely.
And that touches you because that is a divine touch. That is something that you don't see anywhere. I recall one day I was just going to the canteen here, and I found a mother and a son, and they were just outside the men's canteen, and they were looking a little desperate. I asked them what happened, and apparently they're coming to Parthi for the first time, and the mother and father and this little boy. So something happened. The father went for lunch. The mother thought that I'll take the boy with me for lunch, and she went to the women's canteen. In some confusion, they said, no, it's a boy, you cannot bring him here. It was a little boy. I mean, it was a silly thing, and they should have allowed. But for whatever reason, that Sevadal thought that, no, it's a boy, you should go to the boy's canteen, the men's canteen. So the mother comes out. By then, the father has already gone into the canteen. So she didn't know who is going to take the boy for lunch. And she said, this is the thing. So I said, if you don't mind, I'll take him. I'm anyway going for lunch. I'll sit next to him and I'll have. And I'll come out and wait for you. You finish your lunch and come and you can pick up the boy. And she was a little surprised. And she said, is that okay? If it's not a problem. I said, no, it's not a problem. Anyway, I'm going for lunch. I'm not doing anything out of my thing. So I took that fellow, a little chirpy and chatty little fellow. So I had an interesting lunch with him. Like, he had so many questions to ask and all that. So finished my lunch and I came out and I was waiting where I promised the mother that I'll wait. And in the meanwhile, the boy spotted his father.
Right? Okay.
And the father came and the boy blurted out everything. You know, they didn't allow me inside the canteen. And this uncle took me like this and all that. And the father became very upset. He said, what is this? Sai Baba's ashram, all kind of weird rules. After all, a little boy, why you can't take him and all that. So I told him, yeah, it is true. I mean, I don't prescribe to the duty. He was a little boy. He could have gone with his mother. Then I told him, this also happened in the ashram, but do you realize that this also happened, that some stranger chose to come and take care of your child?
Correct.
Right? And I wouldn't have done it if not for Swami.
Correct.
Right? Anybody in my place also would have done it. Any student, any Sevadal would have done it. And then that person said, yes, that is true. Right? I mean, he was safe with a stranger in a strange place like this, and somebody came and helped. I told him, yeah, see, that is what happens in Swami's ashram.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually duty without, I mean, love without duty.
True.
There is no duty. There is, mm-hmm. And I mean, you cannot say there is no duty, because our duty is towards Swami, and that makes us do things which the world sees is mm-hmm. not part of our duty. But I think that is the divine touch. And I think many, many people who have come to Swami who experience that, Sevadal coming out of their love and doing something which, you know, carrying your luggage or going out of their way and doing something. A few days back, one of our boys who work in the Central Trust were saying this, that a family came to the ashram
mm.
at around 8 o'clock. They're coming for the first time. They don't know anything. They've been admitted inside the ashram. They've been given a room, but they had not had dinner.
Mm.
And they had children along with them, so they didn't know what to do. So somebody told them, you go and see in the Punjabi canteen. Maybe they're open. But just when they were reaching the canteen, they found that it was closing.
Mm.
So they said, well, told him, sir, I can't allow you inside. It is closed. So just when this conversation was happening, the person who was in charge of the Punjabi canteen happened to come out. And he saw them and he asked, what is the thing? So he said, this is the thing. We are coming for the first time. Now we can't go out.
They don't know the rules. Yeah.
And we may not be allowed inside. So this person, he said, okay, you wait here. I will just see if anything is there. If anything is there, I'll give you. So he goes inside. He finds that little food is there. But by the time he comes out, he finds that these people have, wandered off, or someone has told them, no, there is no food, you go away. So what this canteen in charge has done, he has gone to the accommodation office, and he has found out, like, this one group came, which room have you allotted to them?
Mm.
He found out the room number, he got the food packed,
mm.
and he went and delivered it in their room.
Mm.
These people are literally in tears.
Mm.
They said, who will do like this?
Correct.
You know, there was no necessity for you to do this.
Mm.
So he said, no, you have come to the ashram for the first time. You cannot go hungry. Swami has given me this duty. I'll have to do whatever best I can.
Mm.
Right? I think these are the things which touch.
Correct.
When you say there is a divine touch in Prashanta Nilayam, in institutions of Swami, I think this is what.
Correct.
People stepping beyond their duty and expressing love.
Very true. Very true. And this sense of freedom. That especially, when we are young, we get carried away by a sense of freedom that, like you were mentioning, we want to see what we want to talk what we want to do what we want to go to the cinema, we want to have party with my friends. And so Professor Kasturi again recollects one very interesting story. He says there was a young chap from Calcutta,
mm-hmm.
and he said he had the calamity of a rich father. The calamity he had was he had a rich father. And so the father was a good man, but he didn't know how to put his son on the right path. And the son was wasting all his time going with his so-called friends. And he would go for parties, he would go for the movies, and he would, waste a lot of money and time and all bad company, mm-hmm. and got into bad habits. His father loved his son and could not correct him. So he didn't know what to do. And he tried telling him, but there was no use. So one day what he did was, he called the helper in the house and he said, I'm giving you 3 books. Just put it on his table. So she goes and puts it. That is the part 1, part 2, part 3 of Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, go and put it on his table. And this boy saw the books and he says, my father has gone crazy. And why should I sit and read these books when I have my friends? Why should I read these books when I have all of them? I'm so busy in life. I'm so busy enjoying my life. And so he was, in that way, he was thinking that way. And one day what happened, they all were supposed to go for some movie with a movie star. And so he was waiting for his friends, and something happened and she dropped out because she could not come. And then his friends were not coming. So he was in a very irritated and in a very, kind of upset that his friends have not come. So he wanted to really go and have a great evening. And since everything was just getting cancelled, so he said, what to do? And he picked up one of those books. And he started reading them. And after a while, his friends came and they said, come, we'll go. He said, sorry, I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first page that he opened and he read, Swami is saying that God is your true friend. God is your true friend. Don't waste time with other friends. They're here only to take advantage of what you have. God is selfless. Love without duty. God is the only one who is your true friend. So he was completely transformed when he read that sentence. And Professor Kasturi says that he went on to actually buy land and build a house in Whitefield next to Swami's ashram.
Mm-hmm.
So that he can come and spend time there. And he says, then no more parties. All he would be busy with was Likhita Nama Japam. He would do Sai Ram, Sai Ram. I mean, that is how Swami has inspired and, you know, influenced so many lives. Professor Kasturi goes on to say, one day he asked Swami, Swami, in this letter which you wrote to your brother, why did you say, Chai Petti Kapadute Vratamunaku? What is, means, I will hold their hand, those who have led, I have a vow to hold the hand of those who have led astray,
gone astray
and to lead them back into goodness. So he asks, why do you have to hold the hand? What is this act of holding the hand? Chai Pattutam, why should you hold the hand? And Swami said, only when you hold the hand, you can give the injection. So beautiful. He said, I have to hold the hand, only then I can give the injection.
Mm.
And that is love without duty is divine.
Absolutely. In fact, whenever you read the Navaveda Bhakti, this question would often come. You have one way of looking at it is Navaveda Bhakti, different types of devotion, but also as progressive steps leading up to Atma Nivedanam.
Right.
If you look at it that way, the relationship of Sakhyam, of having friendship with God, is actually placed very, very high, higher than even Dasyam
exactly.
And Padasevanam and all of that.
Mm.
The reason is actually friendship is defined by the statement.
Right.
That is love without duty.
Oh.
Right? Because there is duty in a relationship with a spouse. There's a duty in relationship between parents and children.
Right.
In your obligations to your institution, to the job that you do.
Correct.
But one relationship where there is no duty is the relationship between two friends.
Friends.
Mm. Right? But there is an untold duty.
Correct.
The love that is there, which it is untold. Right. I think that is why Sakhyam is given the greatest place. And in all of that, the purest form of that is friendship with God.
Very beautiful. Right?
And I think that's that one statement that Swami made. and then Hislop asks, his duty to society universal and binding on every person. There Swami says, if a man is living on spirit, all of duty is based on, Swami says, Deha Dharma. Finally, it comes down to that. When you say Swadharma, Swadharma means the dharma which is defined by I am placed in a relationship with all the people around me.
Correct.
There is somebody who is a compatriot. Somebody who is, I have a duty towards my country. I have a duty towards my family. I have a duty towards my colleagues. But if you were to raise yourself from Dehabhimanam to Atmabhimanam, then all of these duties actually get sublimated.
Right.
So that's why Swami says if a man is living on spirit, if he believes that he is not the body, he is only the Atman, then there is no dharma at all.
Correct.
Then whatever is done, I think, will become like...
It's a spontaneous act of love.
Love without duty.
Yes, yes.
It is the purest form of love.
In fact, when we say we want to help others, service, that is my duty, to serve others. Paropakarartham vidam shadiram. And I think Swami Vivekananda says, you can never help anyone, you can only serve others. That's one of his quotes. But this whole idea of trying to help others, there's a beautiful thought by Nisargadatta Maharaj. He says, the greatest help that you can do to another person is to put him beyond the need for help. Like, you go and help a person and you keep helping that person because still there is a need. But the greatest help that you can do to another person is to put him beyond the need for help. And that comes only from a spiritual outlook. When first of all, you understand who you really are and you're constantly striving and, you know, focusing people's attention towards the absolute truth. Like, they ask him these questions. The world is, there's war going on. There's so much of unhappiness. And what is your contribution? You're sitting and talking. He says, but that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm trying to tell you, be free of these delusions. Be free of what's going on. Focus on the truth. The moment you have that knowledge of the truth, then everything else falls away. In fact, there's that another beautiful statement which he says. He says, what about my family? I think this is the case even with the duties and your dharma and everything that we come across in life. So there's the gentleman who goes to him and says, you're saying that, I am divine and I am this. But what happens to my life? What happens to my family? What happens to my profession? What happens to my role in society? What happens to all this? And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, he says, when the whole house is burning down, you're talking about a single matchstick. So he says, you're talking about, you're worried about a single matchstick that's burning when the whole house is burning down. So he says, so when you're actually in that level of consciousness where you are one with divine, then there is no duty that can bind you, because every action of yours is love without duty. Right. Isn't it so?
Absolutely. I think that's what Swami says. The whole idea is that when you're able to look at yourself, live in the spirit, live as the Atman, that is enabled through following one's duty, right? That's the whole idea. In fact, I would often say this, the paradox of the Gita.
Right.
The whole Gita, Swami says, starts with mamatvam.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's what Dhritarashtra starts with. Kurukshetri,
Dharmakshetri,
Kurukshetri. What are my people and Pandavas doing?
Right.
So it starts with mamatvam. And Arjuna's question also starts with mamatvam. He says, I'm seeing my people. Drishtva Swajanam Krishna, he says. Mm. My people are standing, how can I fight, he says.
Correct.
And the essence of the Gita, Swami says, is use the same mamatvam to find out what is your duty and then perform it. Mama dharma. Right? And Swami says in Gita Vaini, it is nothing but removing a thorn with a thorn.
Right.
Mamatvam is the thorn. Mama dharma is also a thorn. You remove it and discard both. So even the idea of duty actually goes with that. Because mamatvam is what stops you from thinking that you're not this body and you're the Atman. So you use that. I am somebody's son, I am somebody's daughter, I am somebody's husband. Use all of those relationships to perform your duty till the point where you are duty free.
Beautiful.
I don't know whether duty free was ever used in that spiritual context.
Duty free, yeah. But it's a very, very interesting topic, and I think these, we may talk about it, but when you go down to every action that you perform, and when you're actually caught up, that's why they call dharma sankatam.
Right.
You know, you're the dharmic dilemma.
Right.
You're caught up in a dilemma whether this is the right course or that is the right course. And eventually, in any given situation, like for example, Arjuna, when he was caught up in the situation, should I fight with my relatives? Should I fight with my guru? Should I fight with my elders? The right course of action is always when the duty towards yourself. I think the right course of action is what is true, what is being true to myself, the self, that divine spark in me, which transcends the limitations of the body, senses, mind and buddhi. What is true to that self? I think that is what is the dharma or duty that prevails.
Right. In fact, the next exchange that happens, where Swami goes on to say, after saying about living in the spirit, and Hislop says, living on spirit must be having total faith in God and total dependence on Him. For that, Swami says, faith in the divine is single and cannot be gained by reason. Swami would often say this exchange, which we have quoted so many times.
Right.
When a student asks Swami, how to get...
how to develop faith, increase faith.
Swami, how to get
unflinching
faith or something like
okay.
that, he asks. Then the answer Swami gives is, if it is flinching, it is not faith. If it is coming and going, it is not faith. So Swami says faith is there or it is not there, but it can be gained by reason. I think this is something that Swami had mentioned.
Cannot be gained by reason, or
Cannot be gained by reason. Yeah. It cannot be reasoned out, but it can be attained through sadhana.
Yes.
Swami says.
Yes.
So, which means it is there. It is there inherently, and you just uncover it or you make it imminent through the process of sadhana. Swami says.
True.
Then Swami asks, why are people unhappy? Bhishtab says, because they are not fully surrendered to God. Swami says, that is overall, but what is the immediate reason? And then Swami says, the reason is they do not live in the present. Young people think of the future, old people think of the past. While you are here, do not think of the world or the Sai organization. I think specifically to Hislop, be only in the present. Think only of Swami and be happy. Right? So beautifully, and I mean, we were talking about happiness and the research done into happiness.
Living in the moment.
Right, a few weeks back, almost every researcher finally comes down to this thing, that either the mind is too free, it is not thinking of anything that is productive, or it is going into the past or the future. The not dwelling in the present is one of the main reasons for depression. Right, you're not doing, and if you really look at it, all our hostel schedule was done in such a way that there is no time to think of the past or the future. Right? You're so drawn to the present moment with activity, and especially in that age, it is so important. So much of energy that it needs to be put in something that is productive.
Correct.
And poor Swami had to think of all kinds of things, from the the Ganesh chariot making to the annual sports and cultural meet. All of that is for this, that the energy is utilized in doing something productive and keeping the mind pinned to the present.
Yeah, this living in the present is something which Swami has spoken about so many times, and it is a tricky kind of topic where. Like people can just turn around and say, what do you mean by living in the present? I am living in the present. But then, like Swami was in one of the Thrayi sessions, the first sentence Swami starts the Thrayi session with is, he says, sitting here in front of me is of no use. Sitting here and listening to me is of no use. I am not speaking to you people. I'm speaking to your minds. Your mind, if your mind is busy somewhere in the shopping mall, or your mind is roaming around somewhere, what's the point? I'm speaking, and that's why even the first bhajan that Swami sang, Manasa Bajare Guru Charanam, oh mind. So your mind is the one that goes back into the past or in the future. And if the mind is being able to be focused on the present, I think that is why one of those very important spiritual techniques is to focus on the breath. Because that is one thing which is happening currently, which is happening in the now.
Right. Right. That's one of the most important ways. I think we had spoken about that a few weeks back.
Right.
That's something that is right now happening.
Exactly.
And it kind of roots you to that present moment. Right. So Swami brings it back to that. Thereafter, I think there is a lot of conversation that happens which is specific to Hislop. I mean, very beautifully, the love that Swami has for Hislop, the devotion that Hislop has towards Swami is so obvious in that interaction. And if you really think of it, here is one individual, one devotee who has managed to document this.
Right.
For how many devotees Swami must have given this opportunity of sitting and interacting? How many hours and hundreds of hours must have been spent by merely Swami standing there, not even sitting?
Exactly.
A couple of weeks back, we shared that darshan video of Swami standing and listening to Mr. Kavalam Shri Kumar singing Jagadodharana. Right? How many hours Swami would have stood there in the portico, in front of the bungalow, in front of Thrayi, just dispelling doubts, just giving time, right, to all of us. It's an ocean.
Absolutely.
Nothing can be documented enough.
Love without duty.
Right. It's purely love.
Certain times Swami would say, this is my duty, sir. Right. This is my duty, sir. But most of the time it was just love without duty.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, there is nothing. Well, I often think of that. Can anybody find one convocation discourse where Swami says, I've given you free education, come back and work in my organization.
Mm.
I've given you something, come and take care of my ashram.
Exactly.
Mm. Said, nothing. There's nothing that is expected for what he did.
Selfless.
Right? Swami said, live a good life, have a good name, bring happiness to your parents. Right? What would Swami get out of that? Nothing. Right? We all have been recipients of that love that is beyond duty.
Correct.
Right. So I think we'll conclude with that. We'll continue this conversation in the next episode, dear listeners. Thank you for being with us. There's so much in it, and we really hope, even as we are going through this in the program, we and all of you will have the time to take out your time and read these conversations. As I said, these are all available in our website under the section Conversations with Sai. So this is the 40th chapter, the last chapter. We still have a bit more to complete. We'll see how many episodes it takes to complete that. We'll leave you with the song. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Ganesh for the next episode of Veda Jignasa. Till we meet you all next week at 12 for the next episode of Afternoon Satsang. Do take care and keep safe. Jai Sai Ram.
Seeing God in my dear old cat, hearing the sound in a single-handed clap, glimpsing the light in a fallen leaf, sensing its presence in the midst of my grief, feeling the one and the smile of a child, seeing its love flowing gentle and mild, praising God in all that I do, knowing the truth that it's in me and you. See God in each other, in a friend and enemy, a brother. See God in all its wonder, see God living as you, feeling the one always close at hand, grasping a thought that God is who I am, touching the hearts of everyone I see, looking inside, being home with me, catching a song that's coming from within, giving up lies based on fear and sin, seeking to know that which sets us free, releasing it all and coming back to be. Brother, see God in all its wonder, see God living as you. Every time I let my heart be open and I watch God's love flow free, I look upon His creation, and God is all I can see. Every time I hear the voice inside me whisper who I am, I know I'm that child of splendor. With God I walk hand in hand, seeing His form floating through the crowd, revealing the light as He dispels the cloud, embracing His love as it captivates my soul, receiving the faith that I am now made whole. feet of this one, no longer concerned with what I am to become, finding it all here in the presence of sight. In order to live, I must be willing to die.